This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to How to Jumpstart Your Desktop Virtualization Initiative panel discussion sponsored by GTSI, Microsoft, HP, and Citrix on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today's panel will discuss the benefits of desktop virtualization, how it's reducing TCO, lowering energy consumption, creating an agile infrastructure, and opening the way for cloud computing. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
And welcome to the panel. Our guests today are David Smith. He is a Chief Technology Officer at Citrix Federal. Susie Adams, she's Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal. Dennis Tolliver is a Sales Specialist with Hewlett-Packard. And Miguel Cian, he's Senior Enterprise Solutions Consultant at GTSI. It's great to have you all here. Let's get to the very first question. And if we could get from you, Miguel Cian, a brief definition, first of all, of what is desktop virtualization?
Sure, Tom. So to get a good definition of desktop virtualization, we must first define what virtualization is. So what virtualization is, it's the abstraction of physical hardware like a server to make it appear like multiple logical devices. That becomes really popular when you're talking about server virtualization because as CPUs and memory get faster and more density on a server, you're able to utilize that hardware a lot more. So when you're doing desktop virtualization, essentially what you're doing is that you're bringing a desktop workload to the data center for centralized control and standardization.
Okay, there seems to be a move toward that happening now. And Dennis Tolliver of HP, tell us, what do you think is driving the move toward desktop virtualization?
Well, a couple things. And I think one of them is green. It's green a couple ways. Green in that it's better for the environment if we use less power, consume less energy. And green from a pocketbook standpoint in that you save money if you don't use as much for power. So on the desktop virtualization, if you go to what's known as a thin client, it's very much like a PC, but no moving parts, no moving fans, no hard drives. That consumes a lot less power, also gives off less noise. And because whenever you use less power, you give off less heat, it's good in the environment in the office. Less noise, less heat. It's good for the bottom line of the company. It consumes less power. You don't pay for that power. Same's true back in the back end, the server end, but I suspect we'll talk about the back end a little bit more.
And David Smith of Citrix, your company makes some of the glue software that makes all this happen. What do you see as the driving factors nowadays?
So I think there's an element of control that definitely every customer that looks at desktop virtualization wants to take advantage of. Being able to centralize how you manage desktops versus having many, many desktops spread all throughout an organization becomes an element of where an organization starts to look at how they can benefit from desktop virtualization. With that, there's also a security benefit. Moving the desktop, moving data and applications into the control of the data center reduces the security impact of the endpoint. So now if I run everything in the data center and present it to the endpoint, there's less actual resident at that endpoint for me to lose if I were to lose that endpoint.
Okay, and I'd like to ask Susie Adams from Microsoft a question too, the same question. What's driving it? Because you know, Microsoft grew up in the desktop-by-desktop type of world. So how does this help agencies? What do you think is driving it?
So I think a couple of things. I think, like the other panel members talked about, I think that it's for the same reason that people look at server virtualization. They want to be able to take advantage of more of the compute power of the devices that they have. They want access, actually, from a range of devices, not just the PC they're on. So when you look at desktop virtualization, they can go from a thin client application to get access to that desktop or the device of their choice. And with devices these days being, introduced to the market almost on a monthly basis, the latest device, whether it be an iPad, whether it be an iPhone, whether it be a Windows mobile phone, whatever that device might be, they want to be able to have access to their desktop from wherever they are. I think the other reason that people look at desktop virtualization is really for management, centralized management. And I think that that's kind of a double-edged sword. Usually when I talk to agencies that are looking at virtualization, especially desktop virtualization, they think it's really going to solve all their management issues. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. So just because they don't have management today in a decentralized environment doesn't necessarily mean that if they don't do it right in the desktop virtualization world that they'll have management. And so I think that that's one of the driving factors that they'd like to centralize virtualize it to make it easier to try to manage, right, that environment.
So what are the management advantages of when you virtualize versus how it is when all the devices are scattered with their own connectivity?
So one example might be because you centralize everything in the data center, it's a lot easier to patch those desktop images. IT has control of when those desktops are up and running so that you can patch them for security.
Yeah, patching is really a big issue, isn't it, with all networks at this point?
It's absolutely a big issue, especially as more mobile users enter the workforce. It's a lot harder to guarantee that those devices are up for you to install the security updates and OS patches on them. But if you bring them into the data center, IT can ensure that those are always up and can receive the patches. That's one thing. Another thing that is a benefit for IT is that you could actually centralize images and applications where there's technologies out there that you could have one OS image and one application image that you can push to these virtual desktops. So rather than having to do an upgrade on, you know, 1,000 different endpoints to update to the latest Office 2010, you could actually just control that in a few servers and push that out to your population and have IT, you know, do that a lot quicker than if they were to deploy it by the traditional method.
And Dennis, what are the hardware benefits, or are there hardware benefits? How do they work? How do you measure it?
Well, there are hardware benefits, and of course, hardware doesn't work without the software. One of the benefits of virtualizing all the desktops is that now their data is in the data center and it can all be backed up. Whereas on the desktop today, there's a lot of things out there that aren't backed up and maybe not on a consistent basis, but you can implement those policies and enforce them at the data center level, what's on those desktops, and that it's backed up and secured. A lot of things are happening also with encryption. Where would I encrypt data, and what happens when a device is lost, speaking from a security standpoint? And if that device was lost and it was encrypted, do I have a way of recreating that? And of course, from the data center, I'm managing all this with software. But yeah, it also plays with hardware too. The tape backs up and the storage. Because now all those disk drives that were deployed on the desktops, all that is in the data center. So the whole storage way of looking at how I do desktop virtualization has to do a lot with how do I deploy, how do I back up.
And I imagine it's a lot easier to maintain the endpoints, you know, the Hewlett-Packard desktops, for example, or the laptops, when the imagery and of the software load is somewhere else and not individually replicated all over the place.
Well, certainly. Certainly. And it's... And we know that on the desktop, a lot of things can change when not controlled.
Yeah, that's another issue. I want to get to that, back to that in just a minute. And David, is this something for just the campus or the headquarters where you're in the same building as the data center? What about remote offices or people that don't even have an office that are totally mobile?
Yeah, I think that those users gain a huge benefit, especially when you start looking at organizational costs to support those users that exist all over the place. And we are continually moving to a more and more mobile workforce that people work from a lot of different places. So, you know, work is what you do, not necessarily where you are. So if you have a user that's coming in through a one access scenario, maybe from a remote office, versus having a user maybe teleworking and coming in from the home, you need to be able to treat them from an IT perspective similarly. Otherwise, you run into if-then scenarios. If a user is accessing this, then I got to build a system to support this type of user. And so that flexibility, you know, of being able to support multiple devices, multiple networks, is one of those things that desktop virtualization can bring to play.
So, Dennis, you mentioned earlier that this is a green benefit, but it sounds like that even goes further. You could probably close offices in some cases or reduce the real estate footprint because people have that mobility now. And it feels like they were in the office when they're online.
Well, certainly we've done that at Hewlett-Packard. I myself have been a telecommuter for it'll be 18 years now.
Way before it was fashionable.
Before it was fashionable, I was told to go work out of my house, and this is how you do it. So I've seen it develop over time. But it's true, at Hewlett-Packard, almost all of our sales force, they don't have office space. They work out of their houses, and the company does control the images and what we can do. But it works very well and very convenient for both of us.
And Susie, I had a detail question for you. Does this change the way that application developers architect their products to keep in mind the fact that they might be used in a mobility way or might be used in a virtualized way and not the traditional way of loaded on that hard drive for that machine? Well, so, in terms of the software architecture.
So a couple of things there. So virtualization as a whole is it's a lot more than just desktop virtualization. There's also application virtualization, presentation virtualization. So I think it really depends that there is absolutely a difference on how you architect applications depending on how the users are going to use it. Because if you think about virtualization, how we traditionally think about it on the server, the server was kind of the behind-the-scenes glue that's holding everything together, and we don't really the users don't really see how it works. They just expect it to work. When we start to talk about presentation and application and desktop virtualization where the user is actually seeing it, we need to put a lot more emphasis on what that user interface looks like because they're paying attention to it on a, you know, on a daily basis. They have requirements that need to be met from a performance perspective, from a usability perspective that's very different than when you look at traditional server virtualization. And so there's definitely, you know, depending on the network bandwidth, the latency that you have there, there's definitely considerations that developers take into consideration when they're building their applications.
So I remember many years Microsoft had a famous aha moment to bring the internet into the products and make sure that they took into account that change. Sounds like Microsoft is getting into the idea that virtualization is changing software and you want to be ahead of that curve as well.
Absolutely.
Now, virtualization is not one thing any more than ice cream is. There's a lot of flavors here. And so, David, give us an idea of what some of the types of virtualization there are, and we can get into what the different advantages and trade-offs are of them.
So one of the way to think about it, and especially when we go into the topic of desktop virtualization, if you start thinking about the layers of what's on a desktop, you have virtualization that can kind of sit at every layer. So we talked Miguel started off talking about server virtualization. Well, desktop virtualization, you know, what you're doing is separating the hardware from the thing that runs on the hardware. But then you get above that on the stack, and then you have an operating system that exists there. And then on top of that operating system, you have applications. Well, there can be a layer of separation there, which is really gets us into topics like application and presentation virtualization. So what that allows you to do is to separate the OS image from the application or workload that might run on top of that operating system. So I can therefore deliver the application separately than I actually deliver the OS, which gives me a point of separation, a point of management control. So now I don't have to write an application or build an application package for every type of OS that I might like to support. So application virtualization allows me to not only run that application on an operating system, but isolate it so that when I run it locally, it doesn't necessarily conflict with other things that might already be at that endpoint.
So does that imply there's a layer of software in there that the application developers are writing to and not directly to the OS?
The application is still written to the OS that it's meant to run on. However, there is a layer of software there that's helping, you know, package and control the execution of that application so that it can be delivered on demand and so that it also can be isolated from other components that exist on the endpoint.
And what is the name of that layer?
So typically it's some type of application virtualization layer. And so both Citrix and Microsoft leverage technologies that we both have built in that area to isolate the execution of application and enable a kind of a self-service delivery of applications to the endpoint. The other benefit you end up with is when you start talking about technologies like presentation virtualization, what presentation virtualization does that's a little bit different than typical app virtualization is application virtualization is just isolating the execution of the application. Where presentation virtualization allows you to do is run the application in a different spot from where you're using the application. So I may run an application in a data center and deliver it to an endpoint, and that endpoint is not necessarily the same endpoint that you would usually run that application on. So for example, I could run Microsoft Office on a Mac, on a Linux-based device, on an iPhone, on a BlackBerry, and I have that capability because the actual application is running in the data center, not dependent on the resources at the endpoint.
And Miguel, how do you begin to help customers decide what's the right approach?
David touched on a really, really critical point about application virtualization. When we talk to customers today, we find that a majority of their users actually are really good candidates for application virtualization. It doesn't make sense to throw VDI or desktop virtualization by what's currently defined in the market to all the users out there. So one of the things that I advocate and talk to customers about is let's go ahead and understand the different categories of users that you have, and let's see which of the right virtualization tools that are available to you might be a better fit. So there's application virtualization, presentation virtualization, and there's the true VDI or desktop virtualization.
So can you give us an example of the type of user, you know, that might go with each one of those?
Sure. So let's say a user, all they do is web-based applications, or they only use one or two, you know, GOTS or government off-the-shelf applications.
So they someone, not, say, in a data center for, excuse me, in a help desk situation,
help
for
desk
example.
Or somebody perhaps in HR or somebody who's, let's say, a call center. Those are potentially good candidates for application or presentation virtualization because they only need one or two different applications. And then for people that actually need the customization that's provided by VDI, let's say somebody who wants to have the ability to control a desktop background or a screensaver or the way that a mouse moves, like a left hand versus a right hand, that sort of customization, they might be better candidates for VDI, which gives you the individual control of a virtualized desktop.
Okay. So you really have to think about it going into this and kind of classify your users. And so, Dennis, does that have an effect on the type of hardware people buy for different classes of users? Sounds like in some cases you'd have to have a thick client or maybe a thinner client. What goes on there?
Well, precisely. If you wanted to do a very simplistic application and you wanted to be character-based, like in days gone by, you could do that. And then I think we've unconsciously moved to the time where everyone can do things in browsers. We used to go to the internet and say, I'm going to go to the internet now. So you open up the browser. And now you go to run an application and you go, it looks like a browser. Well, it is, because some have said that all modern applications are browser-based. Now, that's not entirely true, I know, but it is true for many applications. They're browser-based. So what we do on the thin client piece of it is some of them have a simplistic operating system on that thin client, and other ones are more complicated in that we'll already have loaded Microsoft's desktop operating system and browser, a very scaled-down version of that in a thin client. So you have the operating environment that you're used to on the desktop, but it's still a thin client. There's no moving hard drive in there. There's no fan. We're saving energy, efficiency, and the data is in the back in the data center. So I believe that answered that question.
And David?
Yeah, I think when you look at especially when you look at client devices, if you look at what's happening in the consumer market, you basically are running into three types of consumer device. You have kind of the mobile device, your Windows mobile phone, your BlackBerry, your iPhone, that provides a mechanism to look at information, but really you snack on information with that device. You're not going to sit down and write a long Word document do a lot of email off of that device. You might do little pieces, tidbits of work off that device. And then you kind of go to the other end of the spectrum where you have your desktop and laptop computers where you're really those are your high productivity devices. And then what we're seeing is kind of a third classification device kind of start to show up in the middle where it's your netbook, maybe your iPad, that are not necessarily full productivity devices, but not necessarily snacking devices either. They provide a mechanism to do different types of work, consume information, maybe interact with information in the back end. And I think that they all have a role in most IT organizations. And where virtualization plays into all that is that if you are typically pushing to one type of device, you may have to program differently for each type of device. Virtualization provides a capability to deliver, manage what application wants and deliver to any type of device.
Well, we've got a lot to discuss, and we will. You're listening to How to Jumpstart Your Desktop Virtualization Initiative panel, sponsored by GTSI, Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard, and Citrix, here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Analysts predict that the next year will see a surging government migration off of Windows XP and onto Windows 7. Are you considering migrating? Join industry experts from GTSI for a timely webinar on how desktop virtualization can help you overcome obstacles, gain greater control, and accelerate migration. Thursday, June 24th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. To register, visit gtsi.com/windows7. That's gtsi.com/windows7.
Looking to cut your data center cost while maintaining your level of service? With a virtualization solution from GTSI, your IT becomes more efficient, application deployment is accelerated, services are more predictable, and upfront planning results in increased long-term savings. GTSI, one mission, yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Welcome back to the How to Jumpstart Your Desktop Virtualization Initiative panel, sponsored by GTSI, Microsoft, HP, and Citrix, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guests today are Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer of Microsoft Federal, Miguel Cian, Senior Enterprise Solutions Consultant at GTSI, David Smith, Chief Technology Officer at Citrix Federal, and Dennis Tolliver, a specialist with Hewlett-Packard. And just before the break, we were talking about the various classes of endpoint hardware and the different uses they have in the virtualized environment that's enabled by what we've been talking about. But Miguel, I wanted to ask you, what does this all mean for the data center that's supporting all this virtualization?
So that's where it becomes really important, because now you've centralized all your desktops, supposedly, in the data center. It becomes important to make sure that the equipment they have running in the data center is robust enough that you don't have downtime and you have high availability. So, you know, unlike the old traditional way, if somebody's laptop, a traditional laptop, dies, that's the only person that's affected. But if you centralize, you know, 200 or 1,000 desktops into your servers and your network and your storage, anytime that network hiccups or if a server goes down, you could potentially affect a handful of people. So you need to make sure that the infrastructure that you set up is robust. And one of the ways that you do that is by leveraging, you know, enterprise class storage, enterprise systems, and making sure that the software that you use has the ability to have high availability and redundancy and fault tolerance.
Okay, and Dennis, what does that mean for the hardware? Do you need different types or classes of hardware to support virtualized environments versus the traditional way of servers and clients?
Well, sometimes, Tom, I know, you need to look at the network, the way you connect them up. Do you have a fast network? And if you're looking to go to virtualization, a virtualized desktop, probably what our customers need to do, our agencies need to do, is to look at their network. Has that been updated? Because practically every device ships with what's known as a 1 gigabit Ethernet connection today, which is fast, but oftentimes it plugs into a slow line. So HP networking, we have a lot of products that'll help get that speed up. So you have to have quick connectivity. Now, when you get into the back to the data center where all these devices connect, what customers mostly do, the government is very good at this, is the data center was full of computers, it was hot, and there wasn't any electricity. So that kind of begs for an answer. Do you have something that doesn't use as much electricity and doesn't run as hot and doesn't use as much space? And the answer is blade servers. So you get more of those servers in less space, consuming less power because they share power supplies and they share fans. And it's very efficiently managed from software and hardware together, the two working together to keep that efficiencies of power consumption, heat dissipation, working well in smaller space so that you can handle all those users, that all their data is now being computed in the back room there in the data center.
Okay, so we've talked about the endpoints. We've come back to the software loads and the way that's architected and this hardware in the data center. Susie Adams, what do you tell customers now? How do you get started with all this? What's the first thing they should do?
So that's a great question. And when we talk to customers, usually the first thing we do is the first thing we talk about is to try to get them to think a little bit differently than they have historically. Historically, federal agencies have usually looked at it from a one size shoe fits all perspective when it comes to desktops, and perhaps even, you know, they might put them in categories, but it was very, you know, it was basically everybody got everything type of scenario. And so what we try to work with our customers or work through today with our customers is having them kind of group their information workers into different categories and then take a look at what the requirements are for each one of those groups. So, for example, you might have a class of users who only need they're literally help desk folks is a great example, as you mentioned before, where they're literally, they work from 8 to 5, they're sitting at their single desk, and a virtualized infrastructure that, and always on, they're always connected to the network, makes sense. Then you have a second class of workers that may be disconnected on the road and very rarely have access to internet connectivity. What kinds of virtualization in their case can they take advantage of? And so that's usually, we usually have our customers look at application virtualization first versus taking a look at desktop and then move to desktop as needed.
And what about those hybrid types of users? And this came up huge way in the federal government last year when we had the storms, I guess earlier this year, when we had those storms and, you know, were people teleworking or what were they doing when they weren't in the office? There are people that work in the office sometimes, and sometimes they're mobile. What about those? David Smith?
So Susie makes a great point, because part of this move back into the data center is part of this is control and how you manage the whole thing. If you took everybody's hard drive out of their computer that sits at their endpoint today and just moved it in the data center, any management problems that you already had at the endpoint move with that hard drive. So part of the virtualization in the data center and part of the what you end up working on is how do I centralize the management of the operating system, the applications, and then the user information that needs to go with those. One of the benefits, though, to desktop virtualization is if you can centrally manage and deploy a desktop, the way you access a desktop when you're in the office versus when you are stuck at home in a snowstorm becomes pretty similar, if not the exact same experience, because the desktop still remains in the data center. It's just how you're connecting to it. Are you connecting in a local network or you're connecting from your home? And so the benefit of that is obviously from a training perspective, now I don't have to teach a user a new way to use their desktop or access their information because it's the same way they do it anytime during the day. And the last thing you want to do is try to teach somebody something new in a crisis or when they need to use it the most.
Yeah. So in other words, wherever they are, that's where their office is. I mean, isn't that's in a way from the user perspective the point of all this? Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And productivity is key. You need to make sure that your users are always productive. And one way to do that is to make sure that the experience that they get working in the office is the same as they would if they're working from a Starbucks or working from home. And the beauty of working with, you know, partners like Microsoft and Citrix is they provide you a broad portfolio of virtualization technologies that gives you that gives IT and whoever needs to manage this the ability to do that. You know, as David mentioned earlier, package once and you could deploy it in a myriad and multiple times to different devices, different users.
And Dennis, the question comes up using HP as an example. Most of the workers, I think, are virtual now or mobile.
Our sales staff, yes.
Yeah, and a lot of large companies, this is the way it is. And so the question comes up, is this right for every federal agency, or are there some people that should maybe stick to the way they're doing it now?
Well, that's a good question, and if I can just interject, I think some people are afraid of the answer because what they do is they do it with that computer that sits on their desk, and what difference would it make if they did that somewhere else? But that changes the whole culture of the thing. So we might as well address that if you do that kind of thing, you're changing the culture some. If someone doesn't own their desktop and they don't sit in an office and compute next to the people they've sat next to, that's a shift in thinking. It can be done, and people find they do it quite successfully. And I do hear just in social gatherings, people lobbying their manager, will you let me work at home more than one day a week? I think that's coming up in the government space a lot.
Yeah, there seems to be that cultural effect of technology, and it affects so many of the tools and devices we've used and adopted in recent years. David, what are you seeing?
So I think if we look at the commercial space and some of the programs that are happening in companies, in very large companies, some of them are starting to look at how do I reduce the overall impact of the endpoint device on my IT budget. And so we actually see consumer companies adopting programs like Bring Your Own Computer, where the device that the user brings in to work every single day is something that they own. The company may provide them some type of stipend to buy that device, but they also to buy support for that device when they buy it. So what the organization supports is the applications and desktops that get delivered to that device. And they control the data, they control the information centrally, but to give the user the flexibility to use what they'd like to use, which is, you know, from a consumer perspective, there's so many different types of devices that exist out there. Everybody kind of has their preference to what they would prefer to be.
Yeah, so the company or the agency says, we'll provide the refrigerator, but you got to bring your own lunch, I guess. And Susie, I guess it could be argued that Microsoft plus the PC really revolutionized in a profound way, which I think we still don't fully understand, work and work life. Do you sense that happening again to some degree because of virtualization and mobility, maybe?
I think it's more the mobility and the device factor here. I think that, especially where we're at today in the history of IT, the devices just are probably the most, that's the most innovation is happening with devices today. And so you'll probably see, just like we saw the iPad, the Windows 7 phone is going to come out. There'll be, I'm sure, the new version of the iPhone was just announced the other day, and we'll go on. And these devices will literally come out probably every 3 to 6 months, whereas the analogy I like to use is, I used to go and get a new cell phone, and the two-year plan was good enough. And now, 6 months after I have my new device, I'm already wanting a new device. And so that is just, it's the proliferation of these devices is really, I think, what's going to change the world. And so the ability to take software and virtualize that and have that on any device is really the revolutionary idea here, is that you're not just tied to a single PC, and that PC is not, kind of a brick sitting on your desk. The PC can really be anything these days, and these applications can run on any of them.
Okay, and Miguel, what is the process involved here? Assuming someone says, agency says, okay, we see benefits here. We see a technical pathway here. What's involved in terms of timetable and steps so that you have a logical way of getting there without blowing up everything?
The logical way to start is to first identify if there's really a business driver, business need for virtualization. Oftentimes, you identify things like we want to make sure that our endpoints are a lot secure than they are now. A recent one that I'm hearing a lot is we want to move to the latest operating system, Windows 7. What's an easier way to get there? Once you've identified that, you can now start talking about the technology. Technology part's really the easiest part, I think. The challenge with desktop virtualization, quite frankly, is that sometimes there's a process and culture change that a company has to adopt. Moving from, I have my own desktop and laptop that I can control to, hey, I'll provide you with a thin client. Sometimes that's a culture change. Another culture change perhaps is now the desktop managers and the server managers now need to start talking, because now you're bringing desktops into the data center. So those are the challenging parts that agencies still need to be aware of. The technology part we could always solve. There's a lot of technologies out there that are good, not only from the server hypervisors, but also the glue that ties it all together with the virtualization software and the hardware. I mean, those are all available.
And David Smith of Citrix, do you find that the CIOs and the people responsible for implementing and managing these new processes have the knowledge they need right now, and you're not talking pig Latin to them when you bring up these topics?
I think that there's a growing awareness, I think, of the technologies that are available. I think that, just to add to the business drivers question for a second, in the end, there has to be an ROI benefit as well. Dollars and cents needs to make sense. And so where people really start looking at recouping costs and how the technologies that they can become aware of can solve problems such as, I need to replace all the desktops in my organization every 3 years right now, or every 5 years. How can I recoup some of that cost to do different things within my organization? How do I simplify the management costs that I have to spend today? And I think all those things are really what the things are on the mind of a CIO. Most of the CIOs that you see in organizations today don't come through a technology path. They come through a business path. And so they are absolutely looking at bottom line dollars and cents and where I can save money in looking at technology and how technology can enable the business to run better.
And so, Susie, it sounds like this is another example of where the CFO, for example, and the CIO need to be on the same wavelength.
Absolutely. I've seen, several instances where an agency is thought that thin clients, alone as standard across the board was going to save them, a significant amount of money. And when they actually sat down and they did the math, they figured out exactly what they were going to need on the server side. They determined that really thin clients were appropriate for a certain part of their workforce, but not for the entire workforce, for a number of different business reasons.
Now, we've talked about the CIO and the CFO, but there's another party in here, and that's the federal program manager, the business owner, the person who's responsible ultimately for the delivery of the mission of the bureau, agency, department. And they also happen to have the budget control, so they have an interest in what's happening down in the IT. They don't necessarily care about the technical details, but they do care about productivity and whether there might be the danger of business interruption. So how does that all get addressed? What do you tell those people in terms of, hey, we've got a big change we're going to make downstairs in your IT shop, and what do they need to know?
That's a great comment that you made there, Tom, about they don't really care about the technology. I'm seeing a lot more that the program owners really just care about the business. They don't care what, you know, what technology's out there that's enabling them to do that. So when we start, when we talk to our agency customers, we advocate not only, you know, understanding what the business drivers are to make sure that you can show ROI, but to do the categorization of the users, to really understand what tool set we need to come in and show them that they're not going to lose productivity for their users, to make sure that the experience that their end users have working on their systems is still the same, that it's not going to be a change for them.
Susie?
So if you think about the program managers that I'm speaking to today, some of the challenges that they have is that, you know, many members of their organization are using different versions of operating systems, different versions of productivity tools. They have challenges deploying these applications down to these desktops. And one of the things that application virtualization can do is speed up, right, the deployment of the tools that they already own in their organizations. For example, I know for a fact that, you know, just Office 2010, that the ability to have that deployed as a virtualized application versus installed on a desktop, right, is a huge benefit for many users inside the federal government.
And David, comments?
Yeah, to Susie's point, right, there's a time to value element, right? If I own something, I want to make sure it's deployable to my users and gets out there as quickly as possible so that I can start to see value from an investment that I may have made. I think that the other thing that we those business owners or project managers are looking at is if I'm going to make a change, I have to provide something that is at least as good, if not better, than the environment that they already had. So can I make a user more productive than they were? Can I make information more secure than it already was? Can I do new things in my business that I wasn't able to do before? And those are all things that I think that the project managers are really looking at is to say, if I'm going to make a shift in the way I do business, what are the benefits I'm going to see on the other end?
So maybe you can present virtualization in a way that shows a program manager that you can try things that you might not have been able to do before.
Or answer things that their users are asking for. So, you know, we talked about devices before. Like, you know, so the user comes in the door and says, hey, I bought this brand new flashy device at Best Buy this weekend. You know, how can I use this to help me do my job? Right. What would be nice and what I think the business owners are looking at is how can I answer that question in a positive way versus saying, no, I have a very, very rigid set of requirements and that's all you can do.
I'm sure what they're concerned about, that program manager, is will this work? And I think that from those of us around the table, we are in partnership together to assure that this works. And certainly Miguel, as a consultant, has implemented it, and we work with Microsoft, our partner, and the Citrix applications in the way it does virtualization is certified to run on HP thin clients. So the four of us working together in partnership, we can give the owner of the business, in this case a project manager of the agency, confidence that it's going to work because they're not the first person doing it. It's not brand new. We're not out on the edge. We're talking about proven technologies here.
We'll stop at that point for a commercial break. You're listening to How to Jumpstart Your Desktop Virtualization Initiative panel, sponsored by GTSI, Microsoft, HP, and Citrix, here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Analysts predict that the next year will see a surging government migration off of Windows XP and onto Windows 7. Are you considering migrating? Join industry experts from GTSI for a timely webinar on how desktop virtualization can help you overcome obstacles, gain greater control, and accelerate migration. Thursday, June 24th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. To register, visit gtsi.com/windows7. That's gtsi.com/windows7.
There's one thing that IT analysts agree on. Consolidation can significantly save IT cost for your agency, up to 50% depending on your application environment. Discover how much you can save with a consolidation solution from GTSI. GTSI. One mission. Yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Welcome back to How to Jumpstart Your Desktop Virtualization Initiative panel, sponsored by GTSI, Microsoft, HP, and Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our panel today is Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft Federal, Miguel Sion, Senior Enterprise Solutions Consultant at GTSI, David Smith, Chief Technology Officer for Citrix Federal, and Dennis Tolliver. He's a specialist with Hewlett-Packard. And of course, the main topic left to cover is that of security. And cybersecurity is foremost in the minds of just about everybody in the federal government and everybody in the vendor community for that matter as well. And so in the case of virtualization, let's talk about some of the security considerations. And I think that virtualization has some effect on even the physical security of devices. And we've had instances of devices being lost and stolen and so forth in the federal government. Let's talk about those. Susie?
Well, so there's a number of things that we can discuss as far as security and virtualization go. I'll just give one example, and I'm sure my colleagues here can give several others. But if we look at the typical laptop being stolen challenge, right? So there's a number of ways that you can physically lock down that laptop. BitLocker is one example, so that you, literally when you open up the laptop, nobody will have access to that data. But better yet, how do you make that employee productive once that laptop's been taken? Right, and how do you actually get them up and running after that? And so there's a number of things you can do, from application virtualization to presentation and desktop, that a combination of those three, depending on the workload, that will allow the user to very quickly obtain a new laptop, literally plug it into the agency network based on your user profile, right, literally through group policy, load the applications onto your desktop and have you productive and ready to go in a matter of, you know, an hour versus what it would have traditionally taken for somebody to get back up and running. And what you can do with things like roaming profiles, folder redirection, to have all your data also stored at a central location versus on that device are just huge benefits, right, to an agency user. From an all-out security perspective, does desktop virtualization actually help you? Well, I think we've made the argument earlier in the panel that the data then is centrally located, right? So it's not just you can have group policies that don't allow users to actually store data on their physical laptop. That can all be centrally managed and backed up, which is obviously a huge security gain there if the laptop were stolen.
And David, what do you see as the top security issues?
So I think that to continue on Susie's point is that the problem that exists out there today in a lot of our agencies is that the information is all over. It's everywhere. Everybody's endpoint has some tidbit of information. And so if you can kind of centralize that, and people are looking at desktop virtualization and app virtualization as a way to bring all that data kind of under one roof so that it can all be centrally managed and controlled and backed up. And so for those endpoints that have a security sensitivity and you don't want to deliver information directly to those endpoints and you're worried about those endpoints walking away, you do have the ability to deliver that information from a central point and where the information would actually never leave your data center, right? So presentation virtualization and desktop virtualization, especially when you're running virtual a VDI type environment, all the execution, all the information stays in the data center. It's only a view that gets delivered to the endpoint. And when that user disconnects, so does all the information that they were looking at. There is nothing resonant back at that endpoint. There's other virtualization technologies, such as virtualization down at the endpoint, that would also provide you some security benefit. So there are newer technologies in the area of client virtualization where you'd actually run virtualization at the laptop or desktop at the endpoint that provides a way to control what's actually run at the endpoint. You can leverage technology down to the chipset to do a trusted boot of a user's local system, and only if the system that's being booted is matches a certain signature would that actually boot. And then you also could kill that environment if the desktop was lost or stolen, and so that when the user would actually try to boot it up. It recognized the fact that it now needs to be killed, and now the user would not have access to anything. You could wipe the system clean.
Is that a functionality that can be built into the network?
Yeah, it's a combination of what's built into the device and the communication that device needs to have to the network. So it would go out and look to see if it's okay to boot, basically.
Okay, yeah, Dennis, what are the security implications for hardware?
Well, you look at, I think, hardware and software. From a physical standpoint, a lot of the smaller devices, they have an ability to lock them up. But to go a little deeper and tag on to what Dave said, this idea of that he referenced earlier, the kill pill, that you're able to go to that device and erase it if it's stolen. There's also tracking software that can be enabled on devices so that when they leave your internet and they show up somewhere else, you know that they have shown up there, and it can, the software can be enabled to destroy the data on that device to keep it secure. But simply physical security encryption, that you're able to encrypt that data wherever it is, and that is oftentimes aided by a chip. Also, if the hard drive is separated from the motherboard it's plugged into, the chip that encrypted it is there. The hard drive goes somewhere else. No one can ever read that data.
And Miguel, do you see the day when we can do away with local hard drives?
Yes, I do. And you can actually see that with even mobile laptops that are really thin clients. So there's a statistic that shows that 12,000 laptops are lost or stolen in airports every day.
So every day?
Every day. 12,000 devices all throughout the United States. Imagine having a thin client laptop that you don't care if you lose that device because there's really nothing on that device, right? There's no intellectual property. There's no agency data that's on there because everything is housed in the data center. I just want to touch on a little bit about security as well. I used to be an IT administrator and dreaded the day that you had to install a service pack on an operating system, right? If I'm bringing this back full circle into desktop virtualization, let me kind of describe a scenario where once you virtualize your desktop, rather than having to deploy a service pack or an operating system update, the traditional method of pushing it out via software distribution mechanisms like System Center or Group Policy, now you can actually patch a single image in your data center, and that single image that you patched once is used by everybody in your organization. So that's the nirvana of desktop virtualization, where you could actually gain tremendous operational efficiencies for IT.
And what are the implications in virtualization, especially if you want to have a pretty strong security policy, of people with thumb drives and downloading parts of information and putting them on other devices? Because if you have an environment and a policy where, okay, no hard drive, or there's a hard drive and the machine can be zapped remotely, yet you still have people, you know, with the equivalent, the modern day equivalent of the floppy disk, which has become the thumb drive. How do you control all that?
So I think if the information resides at the endpoint, it becomes a lot more difficult. But you can still leverage technologies from both Citrix and Microsoft to be able to control what can be plugged into a laptop or desktop computer. But when we start looking at applications and desktops running in the data center, you gain a lot more control because, again, the point of control is in your data center. So now I can make determinations. So if I can say things like, if a user is in the office on a government piece of equipment, I'm going to give them one set of policies. But if the user is teleworking and maybe using a home machine or some other device that I don't trust, maybe I can now turn on and off capabilities that a user would have in the office, such as the ability to print, the ability to copy and paste, the ability to plug in that thumb drive and copy information off. So that point of control, again, centralization is providing me more control of what an end user might be able to do in an application or in a desktop.
And how does this all tie into the cloud? Because what we're talking about in many ways is agencies having their own cloud in terms of performance, if not the commercial model of a cloud.
So that's a very interesting topic, because if you think about where we're going with the centralization of all the data of agencies' data, they're really, in essence, building their own private cloud to some degree, especially when they're serving up, whether it be desktops themselves or the applications themselves. And so I think what you're going to see in the future, and I know that at Microsoft, we are going to offer the ability to do remote management through System Center, and our MDOP offering will be offered in the cloud as a service that users can then purchase. And I think you're going to start to see these types of services evolve over time from, all the major vendors. I do think, though, however, that the private cloud in the scenarios that we've been talking about is probably the most imminent, right, type of solution that's going to evolve in the federal space.
Okay, let's get back to another security question, too, because, cloud, we could do – that would be a whole other panel at some point. But earlier we were talking about this hypervisor layer, this virtualization layer of software. Does that present a new security exposure for the data center and the environment that we need to keep in mind?
It does, although they've taken great strides into making sure that those hypervisors are completely locked down and leave a small footprint on the server. I'm not aware of any publicized hacking or publicized security vulnerability that's been exploited in a hypervisor. If anything, it gives you the mechanism to actually control a server more than you would if you had, you know, thousands of servers proliferating out in your network.
So it sounds like virtualization is a net gain in security.
I definitely think that there is elements of that if you manage it correctly, and I think that's a point I think we've made throughout, is if you manage it correctly, there are huge gains not only in security but in the overall how you manage your desktop environment. To say that any piece of software or anything ever built is ultimately 100% secure is probably a place you'll never absolutely get to, but the ability to centralize and manage all those components and the element of control that gets you probably gets you to a much better state than you are today. And so to look for a nirvana is probably not where you want to go. But if you're looking for gradual improvement or incremental improvement in where you are today, absolutely there's the ability to see that in desktop virtualization.
All right. So now we have this idea. Where is it all heading? I mean, will the day come when everybody is virtualized, whether they're inside the office facility permanently or totally mobile? Is this something that's going to apply to everyone? And where are we headed with all this? Miguel?
What's eventually going to happen, and you know, this is just my personal opinion and my vision, is that desktop virtualization is going to be the norm rather than the exception. Once agencies realize the benefits of implementing their quote-unquote cloud, where it's a shared self-service infrastructure that's inside their data center, where I would like to see desktops is for a user to, you know, regardless of what device they have, it could be their personal home computer, it could be a laptop, it could be their BlackBerry or iPhone, be able to get to whatever application IT allows them to get to. That really is where ultimately it's heading. And then, you know, taking it maybe further than that, being able to mesh a private and a public cloud where even if that user is not, you know, doesn't have the ability to get back to their LAN or to their internal network, they could still get to their application. That's what I would like to see.
So almost a hybrid approach where you could have it unvirtualized for purpose of being disconnected, but then connect again and go back to the virtual environment?
Right. The funny thing is that technology is available now with what's come out from Citrix, where you do have the ability to take a virtual desktop offline and use it. And once you plug back into the network, check it back in, and all the changes get replicated. So it's there. It's just a matter of making sure that from an end-user experience level that it's the exact same experience that they're used to with a thick client, and that there's no productivity loss, essentially.
And Dennis, as an employee of HP, you live this because you say in the sales function they've largely virtualized and mobilized everybody. What does it feel like working?
It feels like you work all the time, but I think people know that in that if you no longer are bound by the four walls of an office at 8:30 to 5, you can just work whenever you want, and sometimes you end up doing that. And anybody that's got email pretty much oftentimes gets work email outside of those office hours. So I feel very productive. That's how I feel. You asked me how I feel. Your question you asked him was about the future. I think a lot of this has to do with access and speed of access. So, you know, it was 3G and now people are saying 4G for wireless access. So wireless is fundamental in doing a lot of things in that we can have access. Now, can we have access and it be secure access? And since I can't hold all of the information on my device, where is the information? Is that information secure? And how quickly can I get to it? So I can just say, to get back to your question about how is it for an HP, I have a good connection to the company, to the mothership, and I can access what I need to access to do my job.
Well, it sounds as if that the idea of encryption has to be baked somehow into this virtualization equation, because many agencies now have policies that you have to have full disk encryption on portable computers, and so the keys and the algorithms are issued by the server, typically, even sometimes the passwords, you know, in those matching password devices. So how does that play in there?
I think it's going a little bit of the opposite direction. I think that there was an immediate panic, obviously, when devices started to get lost and information went with it. And so the immediate reaction was to let's lock down the device versus let's look at how we're going to manage the information better. If you look at your typical service provider, because most IT organizations, that's what they are. They're service providers. Let's look at a DirecTV. Does DirecTV care about what type of TV you have? No, they care that you have a receiver that sits at your house, and they control at the head end what TV stations you have access to. And those TV stations, by the way, are not TV stations that they own. It's services that are provided from third parties. So if you look at where this goes in the area of cloud and the area of how desktop virtualization may evolve is I may centrally manage and control a desktop, but then the applications that get delivered into that desktop could come from multiple places. And so I think that those places that you get delivered from, by the way, are the places where the information lives in one place and can be centrally managed and controlled for any number of users. And so that's the direction I think most IT shops will move in is that service provider type model where one point of central control and be less concerned, not totally ignore, but less concerned about the endpoint.
And Susie, final comment to you on future of where we're headed with virtualization of the desktop.
Earlier you asked me, about virtualization and the cloud and really virtualization. And I agree with some of Miguel's comments earlier that, virtualization is really the enabling technology for cloud. And if we look at, how most of the major cloud vendors have architected their offerings today, it is based on virtualization technology and being able to deliver the compute power, the application to the device of your choice when and where you need it and only when you need it. And that's really what we're talking about by virtualization. And so if I had to look 5 years from now, I think it will be all about choice. I think the end user, right, is going to force the industry to build better, faster devices, and those application workloads will be virtualized and delivered to the device of their choice when they need it.
Well, that brings us to the conclusion today of this discussion. I want to thank our guests, Dennis Tolliver, a specialist with Hewlett-Packard, David Smith, Chief Technology Officer of Citrix Federal, Miguel Cian, Senior Enterprise Solutions Consultant at GTSI, and Susie Adams, Chief Technology Officer at Microsoft Federal.
Thank you for listening to the How to Jumpstart Your Desktop Virtualization Initiative panel, sponsored by GTSI, Microsoft, HP, and Citrix on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
There's one thing that IT analysts agree on. Consolidation can significantly save IT cost for your agency, up to 50% depending on your application environment. Discover how much you can save with a consolidation solution from GTSI. GTSI. One mission. Yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Analysts predict that the next year will see a surging government migration off of Windows XP and onto Windows 7. Are you considering migrating? Join industry experts from GTSI for a timely webinar on how desktop virtualization can help you overcome obstacles, gain greater control, and accelerate migration. Thursday, June 24th from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. To register, visit gtsi.com/windows7. That's gtsi.com/windows7.
Looking to cut your data center costs while maintaining your level of service? With a virtualization solution from GTSI, your IT becomes more efficient. Application deployment is accelerated. Services are more predictable. And upfront planning results in increased long-term savings. GTSI. One mission. Yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.